that we did wrong was staying in the wilderness too long. Keep your eyes on the prize. Hold on, hold on, hold on. That we did right was the day we begun to fight. Keep your eyes on the prize. Hold on, hold on, hold on.
WIOX is supported by Pika Moose Restaurant on Route 28 in Big Indian, with a takeout menu available for pickup between 5 and 8 p.m. Wild mushroom risotto, oven-roasted Snowdance farm chicken, slow-braised beef short ribs, sautéed kale with almonds, warm honey-glazed beets, and more. Pika Moose Takeout, 845-254-6500. 845-254-6500 or peekamooserestaurant.com. WIOX is supported by the Catskill Recreation Center in Arkville, working to maintain a safe environment for staff and members to help prevent the spread of the COVID-19 virus. The rec center is closed now. Stay tuned for our updates. Rec center members wishing to access their lockers should email Becky@CatskillRecreationCenter.org. WIOX is supported by Kimchi Harvest at East Branch Farms on Route 30 at Briggs Road in Roxbury. Growers and sellers of authentic homemade Korean kimchi, the fermented superfood made from cabbage, radish, rhubarb, dandelions, sunchokes, and other seasonal plants and vegetables, and other banchans, traditional Korean side dishes. East Branch Farms. Information and ordering for pickup, 607-326-6177 or eastbranchfarms.com.
Hi, this is Susan Shaw.
And I'm Alan Vella.
We go to New Orleans on All That Gumbo every Friday afternoon from 4 to 6.
And you are listening to WIOX Roxbury.
Live and local in New York's Catskill Mountains at 91.3 FM, MTC Cable Channel 20, and WIOXRadio.org.
Okay, you're listening to WIOX Community Radio, live and local, in the Catskill Mountains at 91.3 FM and MTC Cable Channel 20, and everywhere at WIOXRadio.org, where it's easy to donate if you like what you hear. You can also get WIOX on any smart device through the FM radio apps. This is From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Talk about a different forest-related topic with Ryan and John. John, how's it going?
Things are good.
Are you sure?
I am.
Okay. All right.
I planted some blueberry bushes this last week.
Get out of town.
Three of them went in at the house. There was a big flower bed that we were waiting for flowers to come up this spring, and nothing ever came up. We bought our house in the winter, so we had no idea what to expect. And I said, well, that's a perfect spot for new bushes. So,
what made them the perfect spot?
For me, it was elevated. It was a stone-walled flower bed. Yeah. So to fence it off from deer, for the wintertime, I only have to fence one side of it. That's what made it perfect for me. It's already mulched. There was no grass there to worry about and kill. And I said, you know what? I think I'm going to try it.
They don't seem like grass either, I don't think.
I have a lot of experience growing blueberry bushes. Yeah. But
so my blueberry experience was when I planted them in the yard, they did terribly. And when I weeded around them, they did terrible. You know, I'd put down acid around them and stuff like that. Then when I put them on this mound, it was a little more well-drained and stopped caring about them, even the ones in the other spot. When I stopped weeding them, they did better. And I was like, what is wrong with these guys?
They like a little competition, I guess.
I guess, yeah. It was like when I just gave up on them, they started doing better. I don't know. Beats me. Yeah, blueberries are weird.
Well, two of the three have been in the ground for almost a week now, and then one I actually got it a little later, and I just put it in the ground 3 days ago. They all look healthy.
Yeah.
Nothing looks shocked at them. So
yeah,
I think they're happy. We'll see.
That's cool. Yeah, so I'm all done with firewood. That's good. The grass is growing like insane. It's never grown this much, this fast, since I've been at my house for, I don't know, 7 years.
It's pretty annoying.
It's pretty crazy.
I skipped weed whacking the last time, and then weed whacked this time.
Oh, yeah.
And it turned into a job. I realized I shouldn't have done that.
I know. No, I did a full everything.
Yeah.
The weed whacking, the everything. And I don't know. It's just growing like crazy. Been messing around with deer hides. I was fleshing one the other night and make it into leather. And I don't know if it was a no-see-ums. In the morning. It was early morning. It was around 6 in the morning. Dude, they were bad.
I was getting them last night.
Yeah. Man, they were pain.
Yeah. Well, you don't see them. And,
no-see-ums,
right? But they leave quite a little welt on my arms.
Oh, yeah.
Itchy.
My son, his eye closed shut.
Oh, no, poor
guy.
One
bit him right underneath the eye.
Poor guy.
Yeah, poor little guy. But yeah, I don't care.
I've been seeing quite a few fawns.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I think I've seen three or four the last week.
Yeah, I saw one feeding. That's it.
Cool.
Haven't seen a bear yet this year.
Saw one on the beaver kill. It was kind of funny. It's humorous to me. The mother was walking through the water, crossing the stream. Maybe, I don't know, 6 inches of water. So she's just going through it like nothing. But this little fawn, it was struggling.
Yeah.
It was more than chest deep on this little guy.
Really?
It's kind of humorous to me. It was fine, but just watching it.
Above Roscoe? Lou Beach area or somewhere else?
Yeah, Lou Beach area. You're right.
Yeah, nice.
There's one spot I always see deer crossing, so I always kind of look. Yeah. I've seen multiple bucks crossing in that spot. They're in the water, so I always think to look when I go around this one bend. And sure enough, there was another one.
I was in Prattsville today near the Schoharie and treated the largest ash tree against the emerald ash borer, injected it with some chemicals that killed the borer, and 53.5 inches in diameter. That was a big sucker.
That is a very big tree.
Yeah. So hopefully I can save it.
Did it seem sound? You think
there
was?
Yeah. No, it was sound.
You don't think it's rotten in the inside, huh?
No. This tree was superb.
Amazing.
It's a good tree. But on tonight's show, I think it was already 2 years ago, we interviewed Mark Wolf. He's a director there at the Mountaintop Arboretum over there in Tannersville. Let me see if I can get him on. Mark, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right.
All the way across the mountains.
Yeah, how you doing this day?
Today's been a great day. We had a lot going on. It's funny, you guys are talking about blueberries. They're so unpredictable. Like ours at the Arboretum do, at least the high bush blueberries do best in the rain garden, which is like no drainage, soaking wet, but they do have lots of competition. So maybe that's it.
Yeah, I don't know what their deal is. Yeah.
But yeah, we had there was a lot going on. We have like all the new plantings around the education center. We put in like 10,000 plants almost a year ago. Mostly perennials, but trees and shrubs, and they're all doing great. They're like, it was so slow, but I think like the grass, all of a sudden everything just exploded. And it looks like it's been here for a couple of years. It's so beautiful. And all these like unexpected plant combinations that are coming in. And what else do? We brush hogged a lot today. Our horticulturist Ryan did that. It was a good day for that because it was pretty dry. The ground was pretty dry. It was raining on and off. And I've been doing these, because we're closed, the building's closed to the public. The new beautiful timber frame education center that we are so proud of is closed, and the bathrooms are closed. But the grounds have remained open, and the gardens and the trails have remained open, and there have been more people here than ever. So that's been nice that people are, you know, taking walks and finding some peace and some beauty here. But what got me onto that? I guess I just needed to give you that information. Oh, so what we're doing with the website is we've been trying to engage more for our visitors who aren't here. So I've been doing my favorite tree videos. And I do like one every 2 weeks. And today was the first one where it was not a tree native to the Catskills. It's a tree native to the southern Appalachian Mountains called, I don't know how to pronounce it, it's either Halesia monticola or Halesia monticola, so I don't know, but it's mountain silverbell, and they're blooming right now, and they're just so beautiful, and most of them are white, and there's one sort of like has a blush of pink in the flowers. I don't know if you guys know that tree, but it's just, it's a small-ish, well, these are like 30 feet tall, understory tree that grows in the forest in southern Appalachian Mountains.
Mark,
and they've been here for about 20 years.
What's the tree that you see people plant? Is it Polonia that has a purple flower that's out right now?
Oh, are people planting that?
I think so. It's a pretty tree, man. I mean, there's a few.
It's invasive.
Not in the Catskills.
No, not in the Catskills, but it's invasive down in New York. It's a big tree.
Yeah. Yeah, it gets big. There's one in Boyceville, and I'll be honest, I'm not the most flowery guy, Mark, but this thing stopped me. I was like, that is a nice tree. I mean, it's impressive.
Yeah, they do look beautiful, but they are invasive. I would plant something else.
Well, I mean, every area is different, though. I mean, you know,
that's true,
people
but with,
say
with,
that,
you know, global warming and everything, we don't know.
Yeah, we don't know, but, you know, it's been here a long time. Like that Polonia, that thing has got to be, it's got to be over 60 years old, the one in Boyceville, I would say.
Where is it? Is it on Route 28?
It's off 28A. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't want to draw these people's home, but it's on my
right,
route,
right, right, right.
On my route home. But I have not seen it spread in the woods. And, you know, I look for it. And it stands out real big time right now, when you can tell where people have planted it. But it's a pretty amazing tree. I don't know.
They're beautiful. I remember seeing them in Central Park, I think, was the first time I noticed them. They're just beautiful.
Gary Mead, you better tell him otherwise then, Mark, because Gary Mead, who comes on every third Wednesday, wants to talk about it the next radio show, so you're going to have to stop him.
I will.
he can't get over the flowers, but
they're beautiful, beautiful flowers. It's unreal the how full of flowers they are. But I just worry with, you know, climate change and everything. Maybe something wasn't invasive here, you know, now, but in 5 or 10 years it could be. So I would just do research on those things. You know, everybody has the choice to do what they want to do, unless, of course, the state has outlawed it.
Right. So let's talk about the Mountaintop Arboretum. I mean, when was this thing founded? What's the mission there? And before that even, what landed you at the Mountaintop Arboretum? I know we spoke about it, but that was already 2 years ago, Mark.
What about the land? What was the question you had about the land?
Before we talk about the Mountaintop Arboretum and what it is and when it was founded, what landed you at the Mountaintop Arboretum? How did you get there?
Oh, what landed me here?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, my partner Craig lived here. He's a baker. He's Shandaken Bake. If anybody's listening knows about Shandaken Bake, he used to sell at the Round Barn. And he was living here, and then we met in the like mid-2000s, and I was in the theater in New York City, and then something happened, and I just had to start working with plants, which I had done when I was younger, like a kid, and I went to school for environmental studies originally, but then I went to theater. So anyway, I went to New York Botanical Garden School, professional horticulture for 2 years, and I was working on and off down there, and then we decided when I graduated, we wanted to move back to the Catskills. And right when we were thinking about that, the Arboretum approached New York Botanical Garden and said, we're looking for somebody to be director of horticulture and then become executive director. And they said, oh, well, Mark wants to move to the Catskills. So that's how I met the board of directors and period of a few months. This was back in 2016. And then I ended up, we ended up moving back here in 2016.
And let's get into the Mountaintop Arboretum. I mean, when was that? How did this thing come to be?
So there were Bonnie and Pete Ahrens had a summer cottage overlooking this piece of kind of bouldery, bedrocky, scrubby 6 acres of land that had really never been farmed because it really wasn't good enough. And he loved trees, and she was an amazing plants woman also. She was a member of the Fern Society in New York, so they both were really into plants, and they both loved trees, but he was the one that was like, I want to plant trees down there, and I want to experiment with how cold hardy trees are from all around the world. Like, if you tell me it's a zone 6 plant, I'm going to plant it, and I want to see if it's going to survive, and let's do tests. And he was a research physician. He was one of the early people doing research on the connection between cholesterol and health, like back in the 60s and the 70s. And so they bought this 6 acres, and they brought in all his topsoil and dumped it out and cleared the brush and started planting trees. And they loved oaks. They planted a lot of different kinds of oaks. And they love conifers, and they planted a lot of different kind of conifers. And that was in 77. And then in the mid-80s, they bought 4 more acres, which was the Woodland Walk, which is where the mountain silverbell I was just telling you about were planted. There's a small grove of them in there. They're so beautiful. And then things moved along, and in like mid-2000s, they acquired another 15, 20 acres, and then around 2015, they were given like sort of a donation of 160 or 150 acres that was already a DEP easement, and so that brought it up to 178 acres. So I always, for me, it's just so inspiring. You have this little idea. You're going to take these 6 acres that nobody's ever really done much with, and you're going to plant some trees. And then, I mean, if anybody's visited, you see, like, what can happen if you just bring passion to an idea. And so I think that the story for me is inspiring for that. And Bonnie just passed away. She was 100 years old. She passed away about 2 years ago.
Wow.
So do you have a log of plants and overall diversity that's there?
Yeah, we have. It's not computerized. We have, I mean, since I got here, we've been keeping records on an Excel sheet. We want to get a whole, we want to get a real database collecting software. And it's called IRIS-BG, but we just haven't been able to get it yet. But back in the 70s, they were keeping notebooks of all the plants they were buying. And they bought seed of, like, all these different conifers. And they tried to raise plants from seed. So they have all these records of, you know, they tried watering this many times a week, and this is the sunlight, and then this tray they did this, and what went survived and what failed. And then we have lists of, in these notebooks, of all the trees that were collected over the years. Yeah. So it takes a while to find something, but we have records.
What did they learn from doing all that planting, did you see?
Well, they learned some of these trees that survived, and a lot of them just didn't. I can't really remember what their like when they were propagating. Like I don't remember from reading what was what methods were successful in terms of propagating for different kinds of trees, but they. They got trees from all over the world, and so there's a nice collection here.
And what do you think about that? I mean, are you of the fold that says only native only, or is there a time and place for non-natives as well?
I think for me, I find usually native plants more beautiful in their setting because. I don't know, there's something about the way they relate to the landscape and the way I just find beauty in knowing that they're attracting insects which are helping the ecosystem. So there's like a larger beauty than just how plants look to me. Yeah. But I feel like, you know, they were experimenting, and I think experimentation is important. And I think if there's a plant you really love that isn't native, that if you really want to plant it, you should plant it, as long as it's not invasive and going to impact negatively the ecosystem around you, then I'm all about people getting joy from what they plant. I was listening to a lecture the other day, and if you want to help your, you know, ecosystem, if there's a tree or a shrub or something you love and you want to buy it, maybe buy something of the same genus that is native to your area and maybe plant that in the background somewhere just to give the ecosystem a chance to be healthier, and you can have the plant that you love where you want to see it, because the birds and the bees don't really care where you put the plant, as long as it lives.
Mark, do you have a... active invasive species management program there? I mean, I'm sure there's always something, you know, coming into the arboretum, and that was 170 acres.
Yeah, we have a protocol that's written out for, you know, different species. There are, you know, some species that, like, say, the... it's Bell's honeysuckle, which is a cross between two other non-native honeysuckles. That's like a long-term project that's here, and we're very slowly getting through those. Like something like burning bush, if we see one, we've pretty much eradicated all of them on the property, the big ones. So if we see small ones, we'll, you know, I'll pull it out right away, or we'll note where a bunch of them are, and we'll come back. Japanese stiltgrass, knock on wood, which is really invasive further south in here, and I have seen it up in the Catskills here and there. We don't have any that I know of, but if I see it, I would, like, take it out immediately. So there are, and we work with CRISP, Catskill Regional Invasive Species Partnership, a lot. They do programs with us, and I turn to them for advice on things. So, you know, different plants because of how aggressive or what their population size is on the arboretum will have, like, different levels of management.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a guy who likes debate, and we won't go into it too much on this show, I guess, because you probably don't want to do that. But, you know, we do need to have a conversation on this native versus non-native and defining invasive, I feel like, in natural resources eventually, more so in the future. Because as a forester, to be honest, there are native plants that are just as invasive or interfering as non-natives. New York fern, hay-scented
yep.
fern, even
yep.
Moose maple or striped maple, some people call it, or around
which
here.
My favorite, which was one of my favorite trees.
Yeah, sure. But,
yeah,
you know,
but,
yeah,
but those are coming in an unhealthy system already that's probably overly browsed or by deer or overly disturbed. So they're taking advantage of an area that isn't healthy to start with, as most invasive plants do. I mean, it's not their fault. We don't blame them. But I agree with you. There are native plants that become very aggressive.
Yeah, and I agree. I mean, it's because it's unhealthy, although health is another term to define. But they all share one thing in common most of the time. It's a lack of forest management, I believe, and the deer. I mean, whether they're native, they have a green card, or they don't, they share one thing in common. The deer just don't browse them.
Yeah.
And they have that advantage. They have prickly foliage like Norway spruce, although we're seeing Norway spruce being browsed upon. Multiflora rose. I mean, multiflora rose has been around since the 1700s.
Yep.
You know, and I think it's become a problem because of over-deer browse, but also absentee land ownership. We can't discount absentee land ownership. People just took care of their land, and now most of the people aren't present on the landscape. That has ramifications that haven't been really discussed that much.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yep, I agree with that. Multiflora rose has some kind of fungus that's starting to kill it back, which is a good thing for in my
It's a pain to walk
opinion.
Through. Oh, my God.
Literally.
Yeah.
It's bad.
No, but I hear what you're saying, Ryan, and, you know, I feel like a diverse – this is my own feeling for my own research and knowledge, and my own feeling is that – a diverse forest or meadow ecosystem with a range of plants that can tolerate a range of insect damage and still come back will support more life and will support healthier soils. And that is what I see as healthy. Now, there are, like, ecosystems that are monocultures, like, beach grass. So, you know, there's always an exception to, like, beach grass and dunes. It's pretty much a monoculture.
Right.
But it's adapted to that. And so, you know, not what I just said isn't going to fit every location. But that's my sense of it, that there's a layering of different layers of, you know, heights and leaf types and flower times, you know, that things can be blooming through the season for the insects. So, and then if you have an invasive species that comes in and makes a monoculture, then you've really reduced what that plant life can support. That's where I come from in it.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Tonight's topic is the Mountaintop Arboretum in Tannersville, Greene County, with their executive director, Mark Wolf. So have you tried fencing in any areas on the Arboretum to see what grows and stuff?
Yeah, we have. So before I got here, we have the Woodland Walk, and that was deer fenced. And then we have East Meadow, which is about 15 acres, and about half of that was deer fenced when I got here. And so there's that. And then in the West Meadow, we now have started deer fencing pretty much. I mean, these are like specimen trees that we're deer fencing in the West Meadow, and also like a native shrub, rain garden, and bird cove. We are fencing those too. because the deer browse was just so heavy in the winter and in the really early spring. And then we've also set up some deer exclosures, right, which is the opposite, where in the forest we've set up some areas where it's just like a 40 by 40 square that's fenced, so the deer can't get into this small area, and we're just looking at what native plants are coming in.
What are you finding?
Well, there I've only done it for 2 years, so pretty much what's coming in, those areas in the forest which were cleared of ash, we went in and took out a lot of ash that were about to die in some areas of the forest and sold them as timber. And I thought it would be good because there's all of a sudden all this light coming in. The canopy's gone. What's coming in? So it's pretty much like some asters and some goldenrods and jewelweed so far. But there's a lot more of it than outside the fence. But in the fenced areas that have been fenced, say from at least 10 years, that's where I find more ephemerals, like Trillium and Spring Beauty, Claytonia virginiana, and Bunchberry, which is one of my favorite ground covers, Cornus canadensis. That's coming in the areas that the deer have been out of for, I would say, at least 10 years. So there's a lot more of the ground covers, and of course a lot more tree seedlings. Like one of these areas has a lot more mountain ash coming in. Now I think mountain ash, a lot of them, except for, I've only really seen them growing successfully in the Catskills at really high elevations, like over 3,000 feet, well, pretty much, because they get killed by a fungus at a certain age. But I don't see any mountain ash coming in outside of the deer fenced areas at the Arboretum.
Yeah, anecdotally, I find mountain ash as well. It gets browsed pretty heavily, and you'll find that on cliff faces in the Catskills where deer can't go. You'll also find a very rare plant that's basically a snow cone for deer at those same spots, and that's American yew. And a lot of people will misidentify it for like hemlock, but it looks just like hemlock. In fact, its other common name is ground hemlock, but it's pretty neat.
Oh, really? I confuse it with... I confuse it more with, fir.
Yeah.
But, of course, fir smells differently. And they do have one of them. I think fir has these white stomate lines along the needles, and the yew doesn't. There are a couple other differences. But, yeah, I love coming across yew. Usually I find it's on top of a big boulder.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Just deer can't get.
Yeah, I mean, you have winter mortality up there, too, because the snow gets deeper and deer don't like that. Where you find a ton of this is in the White Mountains of New Hampshire, where there's a lot of snow. And you'll see carpets of ground hemlock or yew mixed in with sugar maple growing like a weed. But that's what the landscape looks like when, I guess, you don't have deer browse. It's pretty crazy. But the first time I saw it was on Panther Mountain as a ranger back in 2004. And we walked by it, me and my supervisor, and we saw those little red berries. And we're like, that's what grows around people's houses. What's that doing up here? That's how unfamiliar we were with seeing it. So it's pretty rare.
Yeah, I see it really rarely.
Yeah.
And it's really when I'm hiking. It's like when I'm hiking up high, like, you know, again, probably... I don't know, over 2,800 feet or something, and it's got to be on, like, a boulder where a deer can't ever get.
Yeah.
Right, because if they find it, they just eat it all up.
It's a snow cone, yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. So we're going to take a break. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. We're talking to Mark Wolf. He's the executive director at the Mountaintop Arboretum.
shattered on God's highway bleeding. Ghosts crowd the young child's fragile eggshell mind. Blood in the streets in the town of New Haven. Blood stains the roofs and the palm trees of Venice. Blood in my love in the terrible summer. Bloody red sun of fantastic L.A.
All right, I guess song's over.
That was abrupt, huh?
Yeah, it was. Indians scattered on Dawn's Highway. You know, I just watched the Doors movie. You ever watch that, John?
No.
Val Kilmer was pretty amazing, if you like the Doors.
Add it to the list.
Which I guess you don't. I guess you don't, John. Anyway, you still there, Mark?
I'm still here. Love All right. that song.
Yeah, great. So we are talking to Mark Wolf. He's the executive director from the Mountaintop Arboretum over there in Tannersville at 2,400 feet in elevation?
Yes.
Amazing. Jeez, 2,400. So we're like at, what, 1,400 here, John, plus or minus, here in Roxbury?
Yeah, down here in the East Branch Valley.
What's your elevation where you live in Delhi, John?
Oh, boy. I looked it up once, and I didn't memorize it. I forget.
Come on.
My house must be 15 and change, though.
I think I'm like 840 to 880.
Mm.
I'm below the poison ivy belt, as I call it.
Yeah.
Where are you again, Ryan?
Sampsonville, Ulster County.
Sampsonville. Yeah. I was just down there the other day. I went to Catskill Native Nursery. We drove through there. It's so pretty through there. I remember last time I was on you, I was talking about the forest here, and you guys were laughing. You're like, you really are like in an alpine forest, because I was talking about the balsam fir and the striped maple and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
So what kind of challenges face you at 2,400 feet with running an arboretum?
Things bloom really late. I don't know. What is 2,400 feet? It's more like it's that combined with the wind, because we're also in this sort of pass that faces north. And so the wind that comes through combined with the those freezing temperatures desiccate a lot of new plantings. But I find, again, this is native plants, you know, I tried a flowering dogwood. And, of course, you have to try a plant quite a few times before it you give up. But flowering dogwoods have a lot of trouble up here. And I planted one. Seemed it was going to make it. Then it was like that, I don't know, it went down to that 2 years ago, what, 2 winters ago. It was just so freezing. It just didn't make it through. I planted a pagoda dogwood in its place last winter, and it loves it here. It just totally took off. You have to be... You just lose a lot of trees that are sort of borderline. Like, I've been told that black gum don't do well up here, but I love black gum trees, so I tried one, and the whole top just died. It just sort of sprouted again from the bottom. So we moved it off to the border, and hopefully some of the sprouts will come, and we'll have the beautiful fall foliage just maybe as a black gum shrub someday. I don't know, but... So that's part of it. That's it. It's, you know, it's the brutal cold and the winds.
Yeah, I got black gum growing on my road, mixed with pitch pine, oak, maple, yellow poplar, and of course flowering dogwood. Flowering dogwood. Yeah, they grow, but I'm at 900 feet, so 840.
Yeah.
I looked mine up while we were just talking. 1620, my house.
1620, all right.
That's pretty high.
Yeah. So, I mean, 2400, I would say that area on the mountaintop is probably the only area in the Catskills where people live, like where there's hamlets, where red spruce and balsam fir kind of grows down in the valley. I mean, I've been on Elka Park, I think. And this one,
that's where I live.
Yeah, this one member's property up one of those roads there. He had nothing but spruce and fir. And I was like, I got to look up the Silvics on this because I don't deal with that very often.
It's a different world. That's an Adirondack world.
Yeah, I mean, that's where I went to school in the Adirondacks. And it was like, I don't know. How do you regenerate this? You know, what management? I had to go back to the books, man.
Yeah, we have, I mean, most of it is spruce hemlock. But there's a stand here. It's just off our property. That is a dominant balsam fir stand, and it's bigger than a stand but smaller than I'd say a forest, and it's just so thick with balsam fir, and there's not much else except some ground covers.
You ever chew on the resin of balsam fir, Mark?
I don't like calling them pimples, but you sort of stick your fingernail in the little pimple on the bark,
yeah,
and pop it, and then you can suck on your fingernail, and it doesn't taste good, but there's something kind of addictive about it.
I've heard you look at some old accounts, and they say it's somewhat stimulating. But
oh, really?
Yeah.
So that makes sense.
You can use it over a wound.
You know? Yeah, it tastes like it's very good for you if you're sick. Or I guess a wound would be right. It tastes like cough medicine. In
yeah.
A way, sort of.
I agree. There's so much about trees, you know, because we'll do a tree with Gary Mead every third Wednesday. There are so much medicinal things that have been lost about trees. It's beyond anyone's knowledge at this point. I mean.
Oh, I know.
God. The inner bark to the bark to the leaves to the needles. There are so many medicinal things. That's like a whole new frontier, really.
It really is, and yeah, all that knowledge is lost. It's weird to think how much is lost, and even just all like the cider. You know, there's guys who are up here. They're opening a new cider press bar or something in Catskill,
yeah.
And they were up here, just going into old fields. They came they came by the Arboretum, and we looked at different apple trees and. They're just starting to experiment again with what they're finding and trying to ID stuff. But, you know, 100 years ago, people knew exactly how to make the best cider, and that knowledge is kind of gone too.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I guess some people are starting to do it again. We prune a lot of the apple trees. We don't make so much cider, right, John? But we see lots and lots of old apple trees, some planted, some wild.
Mm-hmm. Mostly yeah, there's wild. So many wild ones up here. I think this was more of a cider apple place up here on the mountaintop.
That's what I hear throughout most of the Catskills, mostly for cider apples. Mm-hmm. But you can tell if it was planted by looking for that graft union in the ground, even on an old tree. Because, you know, they had catalogs, even in the 1800s, they would order
right.
from.
And, right. That's yeah. right. I always forget about that. Right. If it's got a graft, it was planted.
Absolutely. Yeah. Look for the graft union. Sometimes you'll find a 100-plus-year-old tree, you'll still see that graft union.
And even if the lowest branches are dead and gone, got shaded out, you could still see where someone had potentially shaped it, and there was old scaffold branches down low, and someone took care mm-hmm. of it.
That's pretty mm-hmm. neat. So what do you got cooking for the next few weeks, or what's exciting going on? What are you looking forward to at the Arboretum?
Well, the thing I'm really looking forward to, John already helped me with this, is we're doing a native tree trail. And there's just so many elements to it that I really this project is just moving along slowly. But last year, John helped us map. We decided we wanted to let visitors know about every tree that we have on the property that's native within the blue line of the Catskill Park. So that's a very arbitrary decision, but it's the same kind of thing as saying, well, what's native to New York State? It's an arbitrary line. Trees don't care. But we decided... All right, this is the line. So we have 35-ish trees, most of them growing naturally, but some of them, like, say, we have a white oak, which does not grow on the mountaintop, but it's still in, you know, in our area. But it does grow in parts of the Catskills, obviously, within the Blue Line. So that was planted here, I don't know, 20, 25 years ago. So that's going to be on the trail also. And we have about 35 trees, and it's going to take people through the whole arboretum. And we're going to have a brochure. It's going to sort of tell the story of each tree, bit about it. We haven't decided yet what we're going to talk about, but we don't want it to be like, this is the species, this is the leaf, this is the this. We want it to be more about the story of this tree. Why is it growing here? What do people use it for? What do animals use it for? That kind of thing. Why we love it. And this the sort of the inspiration for this came from the building itself, because we used 21 native tree species to build the education center. And so at first we were going to do a tree trail around so that you would, you know, you see the trees in the building, and we have a key so you can, you know what, you can know what every single beam in the building is, what tree it is of the 21. And then we were going to have people walk around, and then we decided, well, people are really interested in native trees anyway, so we expanded it to be 35 trees. So that's a big project in terms of mapping and creating a text and creating labels for the trees, and with our staff of three people, it's just taking a while. But I'm excited about it. And so that's one thing. And then another thing is we have this really beautiful part of the property in Spruce Glen, which we call Emerald Bog, which Mike Kudish has carbon dated, and it goes back 14,900 years of peat, 11 feet deep of peat in that bog, and he's carbon dated fossils out of there. So it's just like such a beautiful, like prehistoric feeling site. And there's a tiny ridge that goes, that separates it from what we call Emerald Bog Annex, that gets muddy and it gets trampled. So we just did a boardwalk, and we developed interpretive signage, or we have the signage, we still have to put it up, but the boardwalk is going through there. So that's a really nice project, because it just helps to feature a really, really beautiful natural site at the Arboretum.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Tonight's topic is the Mountaintop Arboretum with our Executive Director, Mark Wolf. We're going to take a break, and we'll have a few minutes left to ask Mark some more questions.
Things I learned in a hobo jungle were things they never taught me in a classroom. Like where to find a handout while bumming through Chicago in the afternoon. Hey, I'm not bragging or complaining, I'm just talking to myself man to man. This old mental fat I'm chewing didn't take a lot of doing, but I take a lot of pride in what I am. I guess I grew up a loner, I don't remember ever having any folks around. But I keep thumbing through the phone books and looking for my daddy's name in every town. And I meet lots of friendly people, but I always wind up leaving on the lam. Hey, where I've been or where I'm going didn't take a lot of knowing, but I take a lot of pride in what I am. I never travel in a hurry, cause I got nobody waiting for me anywhere. Home is anywhere I'm living, if it's sleeping on some vacant bench in City Square. Or if I'm working on some road gang, or just living off the fat of our great land. I never
never been nobody's idol, but at least I got a title, and I take a lot of pride in what I am. I never been nobody's idol, but at least I got a title, and I take a lot of pride in what I am. I take a lot of pride in what I am. I take a lot of pride in what I am.
All right. Take that, Luke Bryan. Some Merle Haggard, you know? Right, John? John?
Merle's great.
Should have saw him while he's still alive. You know, I missed out. What, you know, I could have saw him at UPAC.
Yeah?
Yeah. Oh, well. Right? Jeez. So tonight's topic on From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m., is the Mountaintop Arboretum with their director, Mark Wolf. Mark, what's something you wish people knew about the Mountaintop Arboretum in Tannersville?
I guess I wish people would know that we want you to visit in these very trying times. And if you can't visit, we are really moving as much of our programming to webinars as we can. We did a virtual bird walk last week. We had a speaker that was supposed to come up and do a native plant garden design talk, and she did a webinar. Our horticulturist Ryan Moore is doing a wildflower virtual garden walk next week. So if you go to our website, mtarboretum.org, click on events, you can see what webinars are coming up. We are going to start, now that phase two is opening, we're starting to bring volunteers back onto the site and working with volunteers. So if anybody wants to volunteer, That would be great. But really, I just want people to know that the grounds and the trails are open, and it's just so beautiful. And if you feel like you missed spring, this is something I was thinking during that song, our lilacs are in full bloom right now. That's how far behind we are in terms of where our spring is. So if you feel like you missed spring or you're missing spring, come on up and you can see all the spring wildflowers and shrubs blooming again.
Do you have any, I guess I wanted to say, how's the reaction to those webinars and being able to educate with and communicate with the public through that? Is that well responded?
Yeah, it's great, because a lot of people wouldn't have been able to come because they're just in a different state. You know, they happen to not be around. So we're actually getting more people signing up. And we have a lot of our members writing us saying, oh, you know, I wasn't going to be able to be there that weekend anyway, but I really wanted to go to it. Now you have it on the webinar, so I'm so excited that, you know, I can feel part of it. So there's, you know, we miss seeing people. I miss having people in the building, because the building, the education center, is just so beautiful. But a positive thing is more people are getting to learn from the webinars and engage. And the other thing we're doing is we're really reaching out to school students. You know, at first it was, we want to work with the local teachers at Hunter's Tannersville School District. But of course, anything we do is available. So on the website, we have different things families and kids can engage in remotely, and we're working with the library. We do something called Story Time in the Shade 4 times in the summer, and we're working with them on how to do that remotely. There's a lot of different kinds of opportunities, which is a good thing.
Well, so what's your next event? Is it going to be till the fall, you think?
Our next live event?
Yeah. Who knows, right?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
I really don't know.
Yeah, we're not sure either, so.
Yeah, Catskill Forest Association's just been going week by week and canceling as we go, but eventually we'll hit it.
Right. Yeah. Right. It's just too early to know. So.
I am noticing, though, people are outside more, and they are looking at their trees, or trees in general, it seems like to me, but that's just what I feel like I'm seeing.
Yeah, like I said, we are getting more visitors than we have.
Yeah, I talked to a guy the other day. He said he walked in his woods the first time in 10 years just to go walk around. So that's great. Good for you.
Yeah.
Well, that's all the time we have tonight. Thanks for coming on, Mark.
Thank you, Ryan. Thank you, John. It was great to. I'm sorry I couldn't do it in person, but it was great to touch base again and talk to your listeners.
All right. Hopefully, see you around soon.
Yes. Same.
All right. Take care. Good night.
Bye.
If you just missed the show, that was Mark Wolf from the Mountaintop Arboretum. I think we spoke to him about 2 years ago already. So
yeah, time really flies.
Yeah. I know it. But that's all the time we have. I'm From the Forest, and see you next Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. That's all I got. You got anything, John?
No. It's still the season for injecting ash trees with the Catskill Forest Association. If you think you have one to be saved, you can give us a call.
Yeah, as long as it's a crown or live foliage is still pretty healthy, we can do it. So, all right, take care.
Oh, the neon lights were flashing and the icy wind did blow. The water seeped into his shoes and the drizzle turned to snow. His eyes were red, his hopes were dead, and the wine was running low. And the old man came home from the forest. His tears fell on the sidewalk as he stumbled in the street. A dozen faces stopped to stare, but no one stopped to speak. For his castle was a hallway, and the bottle was his friend. And the old man stumbled in from the forest. Up a dark and dingy staircase, the old man made his way. His ragged coat around him as upon his cot he lay. And he wondered how it happened that he'd ended up this way. Getting lost like a fool in the forest. And as he lay there sleeping, vision did appear. Upon his mantle shining the face of one so dear, who'd loved him in the springtime of a long forgotten year, when the wildflowers did bloom in the forest. She touched his grizzled fingers and she called him by his name. And then he heard the joyful sound of children at their games. In an old house on a hillside in some forgotten town, where the river runs down from the forest. With a mighty roar, big jet soars above the canyon streets. And the con men con, but life goes on, for the city never sleeps. And to an old forgotten soldier, the dawn will